Principle 4.2. Meaningful work and meaningful relationships aren't just nice things we chose for ourselves. They are genetically programmed into us. Neuroscientists, psychologists, and evolutionists agree the human brain comes pre-programmed with the need for and enjoyment of social cooperation. Our brains want it and develop better when we have it. The meaningful relationships we get from social cooperation make us happier, healthier, and more productive. Social cooperation is also integral to effective work. It is one of the defining characteristics of being human. Leonard Mlodinow, in his excellent book Subliminal, writes, "We usually assume that what distinguishes us from other species is IQ, but it is our social IQ that ought to be the principal quality that differentiates us." He points out that humans have a unique ability to understand what other people are like and how they are likely to behave. The brain comes programmed to develop this ability. By the time they are 4 years old, most children are able to read others' mental states. This sort of human understanding and cooperation is what makes us so accomplished as a species. As Mlodinow explains, building a car, for example, requires the participation of thousands of people with diverse skills in diverse lands performing diverse tasks. Metals like iron must be extracted from the ground and processed. Glass, rubber, and plastics must be created from numerous chemical precursors and molded. Batteries, radiators, and countless other parts must be produced. Electronic and mechanical systems must be designed, and it all must come together, coordinated from far and wide, in one factory so that the car can be assembled. Today, even the coffee and bagel you might consume while driving to work in the morning is the result of the activities of people all over the world. In his book, The Meaning of Human Existence, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Edward O. Wilson surmises that between 1 million and 2 million years ago, when our ancestors were somewhere between chimpanzees and modern Homo sapiens, the brain evolved in ways supporting cooperation so man could hunt and do other activities. This led the centers of memory and reasoning in the prefrontal cortex to develop beyond those of our primate relatives. As groups became more powerful than individuals and our brains evolved in ways that made larger groups manageable, competition between groups became more important than competition between individuals, and groups that had more cooperative individuals did better than those without them. This evolution led to the development of altruism, morality, and the sense of conscience and honor. Wilson explains that man is perpetually suspended between the two extreme forces that created us: individual selection, which prompted sin, and group selection, which prompted virtue. Which of these forces, self-interest or collective interest, wins out in any organization is a function of that organization's culture, which is a function of the people who shape it. But it's clear that collective interest is what's best, not just for the organization, but for the individuals who make it up. As I'll explain in Work Principles, the rewards of working together to make the pie bigger are greater than the rewards of self-interest, not only in terms of how much pie one gets, but also in the psychic rewards wired into our brains that make us happier and healthier. Knowing how the brain has evolved thus far, we might extrapolate the past into the future to imagine where it will go. Clearly, the evolution of the brain has moved from being non-thinking and self-focused toward being more abstract and more universally focused. For example, the brain evolution that I described has given us, some people more than others, the ability to see ourselves and our circumstances from a higher holistic level, and in some cases, to value the whole that we are a part of even more than ourselves. A few years ago, I had a conversation with the Dalai Lama, in which I explained to him the contemporary neuroscience view that all of our thinking and feeling is due to physiology, in other words, the chemicals, electricity, and biology in our brains working like a machine. This implied that spirituality is due to these physiological mechanics rather than something coming from above. So I asked him what he thought about that. Without hesitation, he responded, "Absolutely," and told me that the next day he was meeting with the University of Wisconsin professor of neuroscience who had helped him learn about this, and he asked me if I wanted to join him. Regrettably, I couldn't, but I recommended to him a book I'd read on the subject called The Spiritual Brain, which I also recommend to you. In our conversation, we went on to discuss the similarities and differences between spirituality and religion. His view was that prayer and meditation seem to have similar effects on the brain in producing feelings of spirituality, the rising above oneself to feel a greater connection to the whole, but that each religion adds its own different superstitions on top of that common feeling of spirituality. Rather than trying to squeeze my own summary of his thinking in here, I'll simply recommend the Dalai Lama's book, Beyond Religion, if you're interested in learning more. In imagining what the future of our thinking will be like, it's also interesting to consider how man himself might change how the brain works. We're certainly doing that with drugs and technology. Given advances in genetic engineering, it's reasonable to expect that someday genetic engineers might mix and match features of different species' brains for different purposes. If you want to have a heightened sense of sight, say, genetic engineers might be able to manipulate the human brain so it grows optic lobes more like those of birds. But since such things won't happen anytime soon, let's get back to the practical question of how all this can help us better deal with ourselves and each other.